We love hip hop.
That's crazy that you worked out of CR3 as well, fam.
Yeah.
It's such a small world, bro.
I know, man. It's I just made the connect with 40 like maybe last year.
So it's gonna keep on moving on you. Something wrong with that.
So just keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and yeah, you're good with the audio. I'm gonna do whatever adjustments I need to do later. Also, even with that studio, fam, like, what years were you out here doing that? Because, like, I remember using that studio back in 2018. You know what? We interviewed, like, fuck. That's the first place that we interviewed Chromas. You ever heard Chromas?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we interviewed Chromas over there. We interviewed Paris Richards, a whole bunch of, like, up-and-coming rappers in there. Uh-huh. There's somebody super, super, like, big time that we interviewed in there that's like slipping my mind, but
CR3?
Yeah, but I had the key and I would just go in there on Sundays most times and just do an interview, maybe two.
You talking to the one on Caribou?
It's on
or is that when it was in Kensington?
In Kensington.
Okay, move now.
Yeah, well, it's not there anymore.
Right.
But it used to be in Kensington.
Right, yeah. I actually got into that with the homie Dusty.
Okay. Yeah. That's who used to be over there.
Yeah. So
yeah.
2018, I think it was the first time I kind of ran through there, but I didn't like actually record anything at that time yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I think, well, the first like person I met out of the whole squad was this guy named Gordo.
Salute to Gordo.
You know what I mean? So yeah, I did this skit. I go way back now where I did this Vice documentary.
Okay.
Vice reached out. And they wanted to do a documentary on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was like, yo, I don't know if my life's that exciting, bro. So I was like, how about we pull in some of these other Prairie Native artists that I work with.
And stuff, yeah, right? Yeah.
And so we got, you know, a bunch of cats on there and then ended up being Rich Kid hosting it.
Oh, wow.
And it was crazy because a couple months before that, I was asked who I wanted to work with. Mm-hmm. And I was a fan of Rich Kid.
I'm going to check the cats.
Yeah. And I was a fan of Rich Kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple months later, I looked at the call sheet for the documentary and motherfucker's name was on there, you know? And I was like, yo, what the fuck? Rich Kid? I was happy, bro. I was excited, you know? And that was kind of my introduction into, like, the world of Toronto hip hop. Like, I shouldn't say my introduction, but my kind of in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Rich Kid, Adi, Papa, his manager at the time.
Yeah.
They invited me back here. So in 2015, I made a trip out. I was kind of posted with one of my homeboys, like, on the block and, you know, like, just outside of downtown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of, like, just toured the city.
Yeah.
Kind of get in where I fit in, show up in events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they brought me to the rehearsal factory in Mississauga. And the first person I met out here was Junior T.
Wow. Like, it's such a small world. Right? All these names that you're mentioning are all people who have been in my inner circle at some point in time or still.
No shit.
Or like we've all worked together in our upbringing. You know what I mean?
That's what's up.
Keep going, man.
Yeah, so you know, I pulled up at the GO station out there.
Yeah.
And it was Junior T coming to scoop me up. And I'm
with,
like,
with little locks.
Yeah. Right, facts. And then he brought me to the rehearsal factory, which is like enough rooms full of different producers and artists and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into this room and there's like eight motherfuckers in there. And it was like Rich Kid, the homie Pops.
And that's producer Pops.
Yeah.
Fire beats.
Trust me, man. That's my guy right there, man.
Yeah, salute to Pops, yo.
Pops is my guy. Who else was there? Crooklyn. Happy birthday, Crooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
DJ Respect.
Okay, salute to Respect, yeah.
Sprox, I think, was in there.
Big Sprox!
You know? Sprox was up in there, and Addy was in there. Mm-hmm. DZ was in there. Who I ended up getting some records. I got records in with a lot of them already so far, but that day was like monumental for me because it was like, yo, they threw on their beats.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Pops immediately kind of like, yo.
Yeah.
that heavy bass, because I had the Warpath joint at the time. I just put out this Warpath joint with Tool Man.
Okay. And we're going to get into that, a full breakdown of that.
Where he produced that. Mm-hmm. And I played that for them, and they're like, yo, what the fuck was that? You know, and then Pop showed me some of his shit, and I was like, out of all the cats, everybody was fucking dope in their own right.
Yeah.
But like, out of all of them, me and Pop's kind of like, yo, shee, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, from then I just kind of like started building, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as time went on, I started meeting more and more folks out here and shit, bro. You know, it led to like places like CR3.
Yeah.
You know, or it led to getting into like places like Soda Studio.
Yeah.
You
know?
And I was
salute
like,
to 40.
Yeah. Big love 40.
Sure. Bibber, we call him, you know what I'm saying? Before the 40 times. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I knew a 40 from like way back because I was part of a group called Team Res Official.
Yes.
In
2003,
2004, 2005, 6, 7, 8. That's what how long we lasted the run, right?
But y'all had some bangers too, fam.
Yeah, thank you, bro. And we made some noise, you know. We kept coming out here for the different awards and stuff like that, right? Like
don't worry about that's Toronto ambiance.
Facts, bro. Different awards, right? Different Indigenous awards. I think it was the Canadian Aboriginal Music Awards that we came out for in 2005. And we met some cats who were doing this like hood showcase, Toronto hood showcase.
Okay.
And it was like 20 like different hoods doing their thing at the time. And we were the only native group to pull up. And everybody's like, yo, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And then they heard us do our thing. And then we started connecting with different people then. And one of those people was my homeboy Sham from Black Tea Mafia back in the day.
Yeah.
Those are some old time things.
This is what, 2003, 2004, you said?
Yeah.
Fuck, I probably was there, bro.
Right.
I probably was there when with Empire doing our thing. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, Empire.
And okay, before you continue the story, because the people in the listening audience are hearing this voice, the people on the screen are like, oh shit, you got him in the studio?
Hey.
But the listening audience are our purest podcast audience. They're like, who's this guy telling these great stories, right?
Right, right.
So a quick introduction here, right? And you know what? Let me go to my Googles here quick, fast. Hold on. Give me a quick second. Because sometimes they have like the, when you got people who are like of a certain status, you get a wiki. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you look somebody up on Google, you get that little write up in the section about who this person is, right?
I don't know what the wiki though, man. I see some like strangers and shit putting in all kinds of information. So,
right? So
I'll have to fact check it.
I'm gonna give you an intro via the wiki.
Okay, bro.
All right. So this Indigenous rapper and activist, okay, accomplished in the field of music, including best music video, best producer / engineer, best rapper / hip hop album, and Indigenous Entertainer of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
The awards followed with the success album Indian Warpath, released in the summer of 2014. However, the
Indian Summer, bro. See how I mean? But Warpath was a single on the album called Indian Summer. So that's why I got a fact check, you know?
Dun, dun, dun. Wiki's fucking around today.
Right.
All right, now, okay, fuck Wiki. We have in the building right now, okay, an artist that I'm really glad that we were able to get this popping today. As I've been doing the research, I'm like, holy shit, man. I can't believe I'm about to be able to sit down and really pick this person's brain today. So with no further ado, we have Dreezus in the mother effing building.
Oh,
I'm gonna throw some sound effects on there.
Blessings.
I think I got a little air horn for you there.
Hey.
So, okay. First off, continue the story because you were talking about the times back in 2003, 2004, 2005, you know, moving around Toronto. There was the hood showcase, bunch of different people in attendance. Probably people like Point Blank were there. Who else?
I just did a show at Point Blank 2 days ago, bro.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, the Indigenous Cannabis Cup for, right here.
Yeah, and you brought gifts. I'm going to smoke some.
No, I had to bring some gifts for the boy.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, we just performed with Noble, too, from Outlaws.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, you know, seeing some Pac shit. It's yeah. crazy. But yeah, go ahead, man.
No, so you continue, because that time right there was a pinnacle time in our hip hop scene.
Mm.
There was a lot of people bubbling. The internet was just starting to get into its groove where people were like, you know, getting used to putting their stuff online. There was MySpace and Facebook was just starting to bubble around those times. This is right pre-YouTube, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So what was going on with your life out there? Because you came out here, you just said that you're one of the only indigenous groups, or actually the only indigenous group that pulled up at the time.
Yeah, at that one showcase.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't remember where we linked up with the person who invited us out there. Mm-hmm. I think they came through to the award show, like, or some shit. We met them at the club. I can't remember, but they said, yo, you got to pull up to this showcase. And it was like all types of hoods in the building.
Right.
And different groups. And we were the only native group. For sure, like 100%. And at the time, we all come from out west. So I'm originally from Saskatchewan. That's
yeah.
where I'm a Plains Cree and Anishinaabe. So we had to, you know, fly out here and we got involved in the showcase. And, you know, I ain't going to lie. I was like, yo, we're the only native group here, man. Mm. What are they going to think? You know, I was still trying to find, you know, like my footing.
Yeah.
But I thought, yo, this is an opportunity nonetheless. This is a stage for us to rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we're never scared of the microphone. You know what I mean? So we hopped on and, you know, we killed it. It felt good. It felt blessed. And people took to us, you know?
Yeah.
People were coming, yo, I never seen no natives get down like that, man. Yo, what's your name? All this stuff. And then that's when I linked up with the homie Sham from Black Tea Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's bringing you way back, Sham. I think he's into acting and all types of crazy stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
But yo, I still got people from, you know, from that time, man.
Mm-hmm.
And during that week, you know, this was back in the CD days when people were pressing the CDs
at the stores and stuff.
Yeah, or like popping into internet cafes.
Yeah.
That's actually where I ran into Trey, the Rhyme Animal. The Rhyme Animal.
Mm-hmm.
He was like
SARS.
He was whipping up some SARS mixtape.
Yep.
And I was like, yo, what is that? You know, boom, put it in the player for the boys. And I'm like, yo, Empire's doing a show this week.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to go there. And I was like, yo, this kid, I remember this kid named Toxic.
Toxic. Yeah.
Yo,
Secret Weapon.
Trust me, he was fire, bro. So we went to the spot and took in an Empire show.
Yeah.
And I know that 40 has roots.
That's his first group.
It's wild, you know, and back then there was this energy out here. It was like, felt like New York City out here and shit.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I shouldn't say like you're.
Anything. So what, sorry, not to interrupt you. What year was this again? If it was 2002, then I wasn't in the picture yet.
No, it was around 2004 or five.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was there though. I was. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I used to get super drunk around them times, but I was there.
Nah, me too. I don't drink anymore, but back then I used to get lit.
Yeah,
you know, and we had a great fucking time, man. And it was monumental to me because, like, to see that level of MC in the country
mm-hmm.
was like, yo, you know, Adam Bomb, Toxic, the Rhyme Animal.
Scandalous,
all these guys, right? And like
Tech Man,
yeah, exactly. And I became a fan, you know, and there was this certain like energy in the city that was just huge, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was like bigger than life to me, you know. And the whole SARS was going on, and
yeah, kind
of, like, you know, the actual SARS was like going around in time, so it gave this like menacing kind of like it added to the SARS mixtapes,
yeah,
for me, you know,
yeah,
and the whole Empire click.
Are you on any of the SARS mixtapes?
No.
Oh, fuck.
Nah, we didn't connect with, we were just like fans of Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like taking their stuff, you know, and it was kind of like looking in from the outside at the time.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, and, you know, things progressed, and we just kept doing our thing and traveling around and connecting with a lot of different crazy integral pieces of Canadian hip hop that I didn't realize at the time would blossom into these, mega groups and powers and this and that.
Like yourself, right? And even for what's going on now, and you got an upcoming birthday on the 28th, saying? So happy early birthday.
Bless, right? Thank you.
What brings you to Toronto?
Shit.
Because you're like from all the way in like Saskatchewan, fam. Actually, Calgary right
now. Yeah, I live in Calgary now with the fam. I like it out there right by the mountains. I'm all about the outdoors now. That's where I get my peace.
Yeah.
That's literally where we get our drinking water straight from the mountain, I'm all about that, like trying to tap into vitality, into that life stream. Because like for so many years, I've been wilding out, bro. Like every day wilding out, different types of substances going in and out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm like, hey, I really appreciate shit like that. The mountains, that's where I find my peace. But yeah, I got booked to do the Indigenous Cannabis Cup, which was in Tyendinaga. About 2.5 hours east of here.
Okay.
It's a res out here that's really heavy on their, they got mad cannabis shops. Like, it's very heavy cannabis in there.
Yeah.
So they booked us out there, and I'm like, a couple hours from the city.
Mm-hmm.
OVO Fest was popping off.
So. Almost.
That's what I'm saying.
Almost got to the third night, and then,
Right?
Yeah.
Salute, man.
To the boy.
But, the homies were like, pull up. So. Mm-hmm. We got all excited and then what happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yo, I always love being out here and building with my people, so I'm definitely going to get into the studio out here.
And
we actually working on a video. Supposed to be working on a video out in Six Nations.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Got the homies, what is it called? Level Up. There's a dispensary out there that sponsors me. Shout out to Level Up.
Yeah.
Vic and all them over at Level Up, Six Nations. So, we just out here, keeping the circle moving, man, working.
So, you mentioned even with the fact that you've purified yourself more now, right? Like you've gotten a lot of the toxic substances and stuff. And even with weed, you just say you don't smoke weed anymore. You're kind of chilling and stuff now, right?
Yeah, bro.
Now, with the birthday coming up at the end of this month, right? Back in the days, what would an average birthday look like for you compared to now that you've you found a different kind of peace?
Yeah, man, I'd be wilding, most definitely wilding and thinking about where I can go to take that party, I want to go here, go there. But now it's like, yo.
Give me the wildest birthday.
The wildest birthday?
Yeah.
Probably when I was in Winnipeg, dog. So I was in Winnipeg for quite a few years, and that's it's a wild place for me, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got all my demons over there. You know what I mean? No, I'm not to say Winnipeg's full of demons or nothing like that, but my demons.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I can share that kind of shit. You know what I mean? But yeah, I used to get bucked, all the way bucked with it, wild.
Mm-hmm.
And,
were things broken that night, basically?
Trust me. Yeah.
Holy shit.
We even tagging up walls and the tellies and stuff.
Wow.
Because I had some graph heads with me.
Okay.
I always I'm always keeping it close with some of the graph legends. And I have deep respect for graph, the art, the culture, because it's very integral part of hip hop music. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely getting wild, but now it's it's obviously comes with growth too, right? Where I like that. I got family, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I got kids, man. I got five kids, bro.
Five kids, eh?
Five boys, dog.
Wow. All boys?
Shout out my baby boys. I love you guys.
No, but also that's proof. Like for anybody who ever wants to know, he wasn't a hoe because you got five boys. Right? Let's just go with it.
Yeah, right?
Right? Let's just go with it, man.
No, yeah, trust me, man. But that's my piece now, bro.
Yeah.
And I realize how much you need that shit as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't really realize that without that, you're spinning out of fucking control, dog. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now it's like, it was always on some, what you gonna give me shit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yo, it's my birthday coming out. What you gonna give me? Whereas now I'm more tapped in with my community and the needs and like the whole ambiance and the whole like, there's so, it's so many layers to the Native community that is not all the way good. It's not all the way blessed. It's, you know, there's some things going on. So mm-hmm. I feel like instead of taking from my community, especially how I used to like, you know, trap and all this bullshit.
Yeah.
Now on my birthday, I'm like, yo, what can I give away? So this year I'm doing something different. So we have a barbecue, mm-hmm. throw a little show in the city, not this city, but my city.
Yeah, yeah.
And give away.
That's dope. Giveaway.
So Native people always have these, you know, giveaways, you know. I just recently partook in a Sundance, which is like, you know, crazy level of commitment, crazy level of strength needed for that, clarity, mm-hmm. you know. And at the end, they have a giveaway. Even powwows. You know, I know you know about powwows.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end, they have giveaways. It's just part of our, like, our culture, right?
What do they give away at a powwow, at the end of a powwow?
Man, it could be anything. There's a lot of blankets, you know, like Pendleton blankets mm-hmm. you see and stuff like that. There's a lot of, like, toys and stuff for the kids.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's food. There's always food. We have feasts, right?
Right.
And you go pull up to a feast, you don't have to bring, well, you can bring some stuff. That's you know, it's encouraged even. Mm-hmm. But you can even pull up without anything and
you'll eat, still leave with a plate.
Something. Yeah. Yeah, eat and like maybe even like a gift.
Nice.
So it's like, that's like the core, our core values is when you take, because we're always taking, like, I'm not saying like in a malicious way or nothing like that, but we're always getting things, right? You mm-hmm. know, whether it be, you know, cake, guava, cash, whatever it may be, opportunities. We always, like, what I'm realizing now is that people are about giving back.
Right.
And, like, we're big on tobacco, even, you know, like, offering tobacco to the literal earth.
Mm-hmm.
So saying, like, yo, keeping that connection with the earth, you know, and giving away is kind of like an extension of that. Like, you're my people.
Right.
You come and vibe with us. Here you go.
Yeah.
You know, just like that came with gifts for you. That's just how I do. You
about
know?
To smoke some moon rocks at some point. Holy.
And you know, this shit came from the earth too.
Yeah.
Right? You know, nowadays it's kind of extra, you know.
Comes from a few different factories and places like that. Some, but yeah, it's still something that essentially came from the earth.
Facts, bro. Yeah. You know, and like that connection is vital to me now.
Yeah.
And like all my life, I was kind of like told about it, but I was too busy in the street. Too kind of jaded by all these other things that kept me distracted from mm-hmm. my true connection, you know, even my true self. So like we go deep, bro.
Yeah.
You know, and that is, I love to like ground myself now. I like to smudge. I smudge before I came here.
And you mentioned that a lot, not to interrupt you. You mentioned that a lot in your rhyme, smudging.
Nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
I hear it.
My song Bless, mm-hmm. I said, I wake up, I smudge up, creator, bless my body.
Yeah.
You know, and I even go as far now with my family, we go out and pick these medicines like sage, sweet pine, sweet grass.
Mm-hmm.
And these are our medicines that we use to cleanse every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to like get our head right. And it's kind of like to keep that protection because we're out there with all kinds of, you know, devils out there, bro.
Yeah.
You know, so. It's probably my most like connected time of my life. And I don't, some people might say connected, like, yo, I know this guy, I know that guy, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ain't connected right here, and right here.
Yeah.
Then what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And even like to bring up like some current times of things that are going on as well. Recently, the Pope, right? He was in the West Coast at first. He just touched down in Quebec. I'm sure he's going to be popping up over here in Ontario at some point.
I think he cut back already.
He's already gone?
Yeah.
So now like he came out here, he came to do an apology for the residential schools and just like the influence of Catholicism, right? On the culture, on indigenous culture.
Mm-hmm.
From two different perspectives, from just like a consensus around you, and then from you personally, do you feel an exception to, or to his apology? Are people accepting it?
Yeah, there's a lot of takes on that, different takes, and I don't feel ways about any which anybody's take. You know what I mean? Like, everybody has the right to have their own feelings, their own, you know, how they take in things, right?
Yeah.
And for this particular, like, situation, millions of lives were affected. If not the people who actually went to these schools, like my family, like my late grandmother, my mom, my dad, my aunties, my uncles.
Yourself?
Myself. I actually went to a residential school called LeBret, which closed down in 97. And, like, a lot of people think that it was just older people, but, like, oh, I went to a school. And at that time, the church had been kind of, like, kicked out of that school. But the traditions that they create or instilled still lived on.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions were, like, crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, I saw the pain that it caused directly for my family.
Right.
And I saw how it left us all, like, wilted, like flowers, bro. Like, we were very depressed, very no confidence, low self-esteem. I didn't think I could do. I didn't think I was worth. I didn't think I could go out there and get it. I didn't think I was. I didn't think I deserved to be happy. You know, I thought that my lane would be just to, you know, drink, wild out, go to jail, you know, because, like, a lot of people that I've seen around me, that's what's happening. You know, I lost a lot of homies. People are locked up. Lost homies to the streets, to alcoholism, family to alcoholism. And I used to see my cook'em, that means grandmother, in my language. I used to see her cry every day, bro. And it was wild because she used to pray to God every day. And it was almost like she was brainwashed.
Right.
To think that, you know, she was taken care of by this. And I know I'm getting deep on a lot of people.
No, I want you to get deep on this, bro.
You know, like, what I mean?
We pod in here today, fam. Like, exactly. This is not these, you know, in and out. Hey, what, you know, what you up to? What's the next single? And all.
No.
I want to get some conversation going.
Yeah. So, you know, just having that very personal, like, I'd always wonder why is she crying every time? Like, she would call me into the room, rub her feet, and then she would start crying, like, when I was, you know, and then she would pray.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have other family members who would be like, I don't want to go to church. I'm going to go to the sweat lodge. I'm going to go see my elders.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get connected with the land. I don't have to go into a building to pray for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I had these different things going on, but the things that affected me most was my grandmother, and she passed away. I was actually locked up when she passed away, and I didn't realize how much it affected me until later on in life. And I kind of started putting things together, like, oh, I remember her telling me fucked up stories about school.
Mm.
You know, my grandmother, Irene Favel, who passed away, if you look her up on YouTube, you'll see a CBC interview where she talks about being a young girl in a residential school, helping out in the kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, I don't want to get too deep, but there's these situations where they kind of pitted us against each other in these schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who listened, the ones who behaved, and the ones who, like, followed the rules were let into places like the kitchen, you know, where they're able to help the nuns cook.
Yeah.
And, like, you know what I mean? But the fucked up thing is that she, like, my cook'em too, she would help cook all these delicious meals for the staff, you know, all these, like, silver platters and shit. And the kids wouldn't get that. The kids would get the slop, you know what I mean? The slop buckets, the shit, you know what I mean? And all these stories coming back to me. And Irene Favel, my late cook'em, that's actually her cousin. Rest in peace. She has this horrible story about her working in the kitchen and knowing that this like young ass girl, like 7-8 years old, got pregnant, bro, from one of the priests. So you know, the priests were like, you know, and she saw with her own eyes the nuns bring down this baby after this girl gave birth.
Wow.
And like put her in like nice clothes and stuff. And they threw this baby into the infirmary or whatever you call it, the fire.
Yeah, the incinerator.
Incinerator.
And that's wild.
And so it's on YouTube, man. You can look it up. It was very difficult for me to process that before, but now I can like, you know, speak about it a little bit and share that story with people because a lot of people don't know this shit, bro. And like she talks about hearing the last sounds from that baby.
Your grandmother.
My grandmother. And
like, not somebody you just heard or somebody you know from around the way. Like,
no
family. Your family.
Yeah. Oof. And it's like kind of describing the sound and also even the smell, bro. And that hurts even now to share that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be because like, everybody's under this cloak that like we're in this like, you know, Canada's a nice place, you know, like, man, it was real. And I know that happens in so many other instances, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My mom didn't go for a long time, but she remembers going in with my uncle, her brother. And as soon as they walked into like the doors, they were separated, right? And of course, there's like, when I went, there was a girl side and a boy side.
Right.
So of course they were separated that way, but they're also told not to talk to each other.
Interesting.
And they got in shit if they were like, yo, hey.
So, and not to interrupt you, not to talk to each other in school, but outside of school, it's cool. Or does it get like conditioned in your brain that even outside of school, it's not cool anymore? Yeah.
So that's she remembers fucked. Just silence, bro. She remembers it being so silent in schools because all the kids were like,
nobody wants to get fucked
you
up.
Say something. You know what I mean?
So the teachers fuck you up for saying shit.
Yeah. For real. Like 100%. You know? And so that was breaking down the family.
Mm-hmm.
The family model. Like they had a mission, bro. Like they're called missionaries, dog.
Yeah.
They had a mission to kill the Indian. No, what is it? Save the man. No, kill the Indian, save the man. Something like that.
Wow.
Or kill the Indian, save the child or something like that was their like mission. I remember like, I can't quote it right now, but like, that's a very like kind of famous quote.
Mm-hmm.
And, they broke down our families that way. And yes, sir. And, you know, by doing that, they confused us, you know, they basically made it feel like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't cool to talk to your family or it wasn't right or like you shouldn't. So it broke us down psychologically,
mm-hmm.
physically, if you actually, you know, spoke out or if you did something wrong. I've heard stories of nuns making kids like, put their faces in their pee if they peed the bed or if they like, you know, shit the bed or something.
Yeah.
Putting
yeah.
their faces in it, you know, making them like fucking eat it, you know, stuff like that. Like this was happening in their schools all over the place, bro. You know, my res
is called, all over Canada,
all over Canada, US too, you know, North America. We call it Turtle Island, you know, like, cause it's, we don't see it as Canada, US. We see it as Turtle Island. It's like, we're all the same people, mm-hmm. right? And there was no borders back then, right? And so with the schools, they knew what they're doing. And I see the effects now to where there's a lot of fighting in families. A lot of brothers and sisters don't know how to communicate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to communicate with ourselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a lot of kids are lost. Come up like I work in a lot of Native communities now as part of my work. You know, I get booked to do a show, but my favorite part about it is connecting with that community and getting into the classrooms. You know, sometimes we'll tap into their creativity because that's what helped me get out of my little box that, that I was in. Creativity was the key for me to be able to voice the shit that was going on. So for me now, when I see young kids, like you go into Native communities, a lot of, oh, I don't have a long sleeve, but they're like, they got the long sleeve right here. And they're like, they won't look at you. Right. Or they'll have their head in the desk, you know, like, you know,
wow.
When we first get there, you know, and then we'll work with them for a couple of days or something. And then I literally see them like, you know, like a wilted flower, like, you know, all of a sudden by the end of the trip, they're rapping, they're singing.
What's has me blown back is that you're telling these stories and I'm going, while I'm listening to you tell the stories, my brain is transitioning from back in the days of what you're explaining. And then you're explaining now of how the people are as well. So I'm just like, that's what's catching me. It's like, wow, this is still happening now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then it makes the Pope's apology really not feel like enough.
Facts, bro. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm giving you that backside, because the back end of the story, because you literally see examples of that lockup in people on the street. People think that Native people are just drunks on the street. Mm-hmm. Those guys are locked up in their own minds. Those are a perfect example of that conditioning and that abuse mm-hmm. that we suffered. And I've read up on like a little bit up on like the effects and some of the systems of like slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And I see so many similarities that they wanted to break you down in front of your family.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to emaciate. Is that the right word? I'm not sure if that's the right word, but you know, like basically take away your manhood in front of your family.
Emasculate. Yeah.
You know, and,
they also the separation of the different African tribes as they put them on the boats and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
just so that like when they reach the mainlands of over here in Turtle Island, right? That they wouldn't know their history, right? So, you know, for us over here in Canada, we're blessed a lot to, you know, okay, I come from Nigeria, I come from Barbados, Jamaica, and different places like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of Americans, they don't know exactly what their lineage is because of the separations on the boats on the way here,
mm-hmm.
right? So they don't know that they have to go and do those 23andMe's and all that so that mm-hmm. they can find out that they have Zimbabwean blood and different things like that. Like they have no idea. They're like, I'm from Kansas or I'm from, and that's cool. Like it's no diss to them. It's just, it's not cool, but it's no diss to them.
No, I feel you.
It's just that it's the same thing. The separation.
Separation, bro.
Right?
Like to throw you out of the loop, out of that. Because circles to us are very important. And circle to me represents community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like without that community, you're not whole, right? Like you're spinning in your own little, you know, loop.
Yeah.
And that's when I see these cats on the street, they're spinning in their own little loop because
mm-hmm.
they don't have nobody to reach out to make that circle stronger, bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So exactly what you're saying is like they confused, you know, they, just like with the schools, like they might take somebody to this school and then the sister to that school. Or if you're in the same school, you cannot.
Can't talk to each other.
So crazy. You couldn't speak your language. You know, I seen this picture recently of this artist, they're throat singers
mm-hmm.
from I don't want to get it wrong. I think they're Inuk people, like Inuit.
Okay.
From up north. And they have this group called Pilk Silk. And, they're dope as fuck, but I don't know if it was their album cover or just a post they made, but during all this time, everybody's pulling out their own like residential school posts,
mm-hmm.
you know, like even up there. And you see all these Inuk kids, you know, in classroom, and there's a big sign in the back that says, do not speak Inuit or whatever it was. Do not speak the language.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So like they would cut our hair, you know, that's why for me it was important for me to grow my hair back. You know, I got my sides shaved and all that, but like it was important for me to have a braid. All my, my sons have braids, you know, and they love it. They're like, yo, mom, can you braid my hair up like that? And to me it was like, shh.
No, don't. That explains a lot too, because I see a lot of indigenous guys with longer hair.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a sign because they've made you cut your hair before.
Yeah.
Me as somebody from the outside, right? And I'm not like always doing a bunch of studies. I need to speak to people who are in the culture to know these things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea, fam. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's another thing where they emasculated us to where it's like, oh, why you got long hair, man?
Mm.
You know what? Da, 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 da. Like, you know, you a girl? You know, like, and a lot of the times my kids.
And I'm sure they weren't saying girl. They're probably saying you a bitch.
Yeah, or some shit like that, yeah. Right? You know, and my kids, when we go out in public, a lot of the times the other little kids are like, are you a girl? You know what I mean? Stuff like that, right? Yeah. And it's like, that's how far it's made it into little babies, bro.
No, it's still in our society today.
100%.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I kind of liken it to like, like even the movie Avatar,
mm-hmm.
I know it's fictional and all that, but like they use like native people as like the premise for the Avatar,
mm-hmm.
where they had these like long braids or whatever, and they would connect to their like their animal or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it, you know, they like connect, and that was a power source, right? That's how I liken it. Our hair, you know, it's like it's part of our prayers, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's very important for me to show my kids that. And now, you know, and to go back and learn my language, go back and learn the ceremonies,
because mm-hmm.
they were banned up until like 70s, bro. You know what
wow.
I mean? Like
wow.
They banned the potlatch for the West Coast natives. Like there's so many different groups of natives, and that's one thing I want to tell people out there too, is mm-hmm. that we're not just one tribe, you know, we're not just one native tribe. There's literally, I think there's, I don't want to say this wrong, but there's hundreds of tribes, bro, you know, mm-hmm. and all over Turtle Island. So like we have different languages, different dialects, different customs, different ceremonies, different ways of handling things, different ways of handling life and death. So like we're different nations, you know what I mean? So like a lot more complex than people, you know, kind of take us as, you know?
My bad. Let me ask you a couple questions, even like from like your history going back, right?
Yeah.
Born in the early 80s,
uh-huh.
right? You're I'm going to try to not fuck up this word. Anishinaabe.
Yeah. Some people say that. I think, you know, there's different ways people like I said, there's even different groups of Anishinaabe people.
Mm-hmm.
So I call them like Toronto. A lot of my people were here originally.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of groups. There was Anishinaabe and there was Haudenosaunee.
Okay.
Which is like Mohawk, Iroquois, Cayuga, and Anishinaabe groups were like.
Y'all is Cree and Ojibwe.
Yeah. So Cree's a different tribe.
Yeah.
That like is mainly in the plains, but it kind of stretches across. It's actually the biggest tribe in the country.
Okay.
So like even with the Pope stuff, like people are like, yo, Cree people gave the Pope a headdress, but there's like so many different types of other Crees. They're like, nah, not us. You know, that was those guys. But mm-hmm. like that's a whole nother thing, right?
Right, right.
But there's literally like I think 250,000 Crees in the country. And then there's like, I don't know how many Anishinaabe, but we originally came from the Northeast, and through like colonization, we were pushed inwards, you know, to where I'm part of the Soto. It's called Soto, which is like the wing, the furthest western wing of Anishinaabe people.
Okay.
We got pushed all the way to the prairies, right? And that's where my Plains Cree side comes in too, from the prairies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we got pushed in from both sides, from the settlers on the west, settlers on the east, and then, you know, we had some wars and shit, and that's, we're like, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, that gets deep, and I'm still learning about all that right now as we speak. You know?
Right.
But definitely Plains Cree and Anishinaabe is who I am.
And you grew up in Muskogee, Saskatchewan.
That's where I'm from. That's my actual, like, res.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So we have nations like Anishinaabe and Cree, mm-hmm, and Mohawk, Blackfoot, Haida, all these, there's tons.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have reserves that are part of these nations,
mm-hmm,
which are smaller communities. So someone might identify as, yo, I come from Muskogee, or someone might say, I'm Anishinaabe, or, you know what I mean? There's all these different little subtleties that make us who we are. So
right.
I'm from Muskogee, which had a residential school on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's still standing, but it's like, you know, gutted and shit. But I was born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan,
okay,
you know, and, you know, the west side of Saskatoon is full of like all of those kind of results of colonization. Like, there's, you got your gangs, you got your alcoholism, you got your crime, you got your, you know, all that shit,
mm-hmm,
you know, and that's where I was born. And my mom, she was kind of privy to all this, like, I don't want my son to run through that gauntlet.
Yeah.
So she tried to bring us out west to Calgary.
Okay.
Know, where I got to like go to school with you know, Vietnamese. One of my best friends was Vietnamese coming up, and like you know, Jamaican cats. Even though, you know, mm-hmm, I got into the food. You know, I,
yeah, growing
up, the stewed chickens and all the good stuff, yeah, oxtails. You know,
you got to, I got to experience different cultures. And before you continue. You say your mom brought you out there. So your mom and dad didn't stay together after Saskatchewan?
No, I don't really know how long they stayed together, but my dad wasn't really part of the picture.
Yeah. And also, before you continue, did she just bring you, or did you have like a bunch of siblings to come with you too?
No, it was just me.
Oh, so you're only child?
Yeah, I was blessed.
Oh, shit.
Well, me, I too, have a little brother now.
Okay.
But at the time, it was just me and her.
Yeah.
So like, I was lucky, bro. Like,
I have brothers that I found out on my dad's side.
Oh, yeah, I got enough brothers over there, bro.
And then, or sisters. I got a bunch of sisters on, me, my too, dad's side, because, yeah, my dad was a hoe, right? But
yeah, same, bro.
You know what I mean? But, you know, y'all moved, the two of y'all, down to Calgary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So what's that like? Because that mother-son thing, it's like a different dynamic, because it's hard to just control. You're the man in the house, fam.
Yeah.
So it's hard to just keep you in line, bro.
Yeah. No, I went out and I was wilding, you know. Like, but the thing is like, it was a different, I don't know, it was like what I said, with different cultures, you know.
Mm.
I was running with all different types of cats.
Yeah.
So one thing that wasn't happening, though, was talk of my culture, my religion. I shouldn't say religion.
Mm-hmm.
My spirituality.
Yeah.
None of that was in the picture yet. All it was like, you know, whatever have you in the streets, or my favorite thing of all time, hip hop music came, mm-hmm, into play.
Like Biggie, Cypress.
Trust me.
Who else is there? Psycho Realm.
Yeah, but even before that, when I was younger, like people like Criss Cross.
Holy.
You know, like, I'm old head, bro, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like,
the Mac Daddy make it jump, bro.
Yeah, but even people like Public Enemy,
mm-hmm,
NWA.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Eazy-E.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Eazy-E and shit like that.
You're probably on Buddy too, the Native Tongues collabo, De La Soul,
yeah,
and
course,
Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, you're Q-Tip.
Everybody was on all that
stuff. What's the scenario or whatever, mm-hmm, like that? That shit, you know, Busta Rhymes. I got deep into it, you know. Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube was my favorite, you know, like,
yeah,
because he was like, to me, it was like when I saw hip hop, like Ice Cube, it was like, yo, I want to be able to speak on shit like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how, I don't know where to start. I didn't know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I gravitated to that voice.
America's Most Wanted album, Lethal Injection.
Because they were just, he was just talking shit that, like, he was talking a lot of political shit at the time,
a lot. You know what I mean? And that's when he hooked up with Public Enemy's producers, the Bomb Squad.
Too. Bomb Squad, trust me. And that's when he did America's Most,
mm-hmm.
you know, and which led to, like, you know, I used to listen to Hieroglyphics, which is, you know,
Souls of Mischief,
Del the Funky, Homo Sapiens,
Del the Funky,
Catch a Bad One was my jam back in the day, which led to, like, all types of different, like, I could go for days on that, you know.
So there's that time.
Right.
And, you know, I do my research, so that's how I pulled out the Biggie and the Cypress, because that's another era. That's like the early 90s hip hop, right? Or even like getting towards the mid 90s of hip hop.
Right.
Is the early stuff didn't make you want to rap? Was it the later stuff, or were you always wanted to, hearing the early stuff make you want
to
rap too?
Yeah, I always wanted to. I just didn't know how to at the time, how to get my voice out.
Mm-hmm.
But hip hop was the key to unlock me.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, I might have been, like, you know, biting in some styles here and there in the beginning because, like, I didn't have my own footing yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I gravitated to Ice Cube, you know, like the chubby guy, Biggie Smalls, because he's a big-ass dude. I was like, yo, if he can do some shit like that, I might be able to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people around me, not just my people, were like, you can't rap. You're native. You shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
Yo, you're whack. No. All this stuff, right? And that was a barrier at first, but I started, like, just doing my own thing in my room and shit, right?
Yeah.
Because I was, like, introvert too, right? So if I wasn't with my boy Fu, who's a Vietnamese cat, I'd be in the room, but every time I was with him, he'd be like, yo, let's go to Sam or whatever the fuck it was at the time, steal some tapes.
Sam the record man.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
And we would
go, you know, teach some tapes, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we gift each other tapes Christmas. Like, I remember one year he gave me The Chronic and I gave him, like, Snoop Dogg's first album and shit. You know what I mean? And, like, it created this, like, energy, right? So whenever he wasn't around, I would go and grab my late Cookham's boombox.
Yeah.
And I, you know, back in the day, I discovered that you can, like, there was one radio show in Calgary that on Sundays from 3 to 6, it's still on to this motherfucking day.
Shout them out.
Yo. CJSW 90.9. Okay. You guys are very integral in my hip hop upbringing, education. I would tap in every Sunday. We'd be like, yo, get your shit ready.
Mm-hmm.
Record,
keep going,
you know, and then boom, they were playing all the hip hop shit from 3 to 6. Hit that record button, and that's when I realized I could start to make my own little mixtapes. You know what I mean? And then one day, while I'm making a mixtape, I started, I don't know what I did, but I was, like, rapping along with the shit, the song that was on. And I went back a few weeks later to check that tape to listen to it, and I heard my voice on there.
Mm.
Because I don't know if you remember back then, certain models of those, like, boom boxes acted, the speaker acted as a microphone.
That's a microphone, yeah.
I'm like, that's my fucking voice, yo. That's my voice. I'm like, ah, shit. What if I mess with it a little bit? So I started, like, yo, I'm just going to record my voice solely.
Mm.
I would even try, like, you know, speaking.
So you're, like, rapping into the boom box.
Yeah, yo. Like, just, like, because I was by myself and, you know, it was whatever, right? And I would literally, shit that I didn't know how to say to people in real life,
mm-hmm.
I would say to this thing. Even, like girls and shit.
Yeah.
Bro, everything.
Get your shit off.
And I would listen to it back and I'd be like, if it was a rapper, I'd be like, oh, I can make that sound different if I just do this. So I discovered my voice with the boombox.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started, like, thinking, okay, I could rap. So I started writing little raps. And one of the first raps, I don't know the exact, like, cadence or any of that shit, but when I look back and think about it, the first words to ever come out of my pen was, I'm a Cree child, rhymed it with freestyle, buck wild, juvenile, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Bro, my very first raps, I was trying to tell you who the fuck I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and that blows my mind because hip hop did that for me, you know?
And your voice, basically.
Yeah. And my mom was so supportive of it. Like, she would just, you know, she wouldn't care if I was playing all this music. She wouldn't be like, turn that shit off. She'd be like, she would start to like it herself.
Yeah.
And even my late auntie Sharon, she used to pull up and listen to Ice Cube with me. She'd be like, play that new Ice Cube.
Yeah.
You know, and I literally remember sitting there playing Lethal Injection, the tape from Ice Cube, with my auntie. You know, and we just sitting there and I'd be like, yo, this is the coolest shit that my auntie likes this shit with me. Mm-hmm. So it even grew that sense of
the bonding of your family, with your family.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's
crazy.
That's dope, man. Right? Because usually parents are like, turn that shit off. There's a lot of cursing, all that shit, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I feel like maybe they can hear and identify with what Ice Cube and different rappers who were pushing that political angle were saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why turn it off? They're speaking the truth.
Yeah. I wouldn't play like Two Live Crew or none of that shit around my mom.
Something with a message.
Yeah. So like, you know, Tribe Called Quest, you know, people like that. And I kind of knew what, like, Ice Cube was on like the kind of extreme end of that, but it was so dope that my auntie liked it. So I was like, it was literally connecting me with my family, and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of repairing those connections. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when I think about the grand scheme of things, hip hop, I just said this yesterday to my homie. We were up to like 3 a.m. having a conversation last night at the B&B. And I was like, telling him some shit that he never knew about me and how hip hop music unlocked a certain sense of confidence and sense of self in myself and literally brought me back around to my own culture. That power, that strength.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And even with your songs, right? As you like started making music, and that was like, what, roughly around 2005, I guess?
No, before that.
2000, let's say.
Yeah.
You started like releasing music.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We started releasing music around, I think, 2002.
Okay. And this is just from my research, right? Because you were mentioning in an interview, salute to the LA natives, right? I was watching the podcast episode that you did with them, right? And, you know, you're explaining how you went from like talking more thuggy stuff to like getting into more the indigenous culture and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Then you dropped Red Winter, right? That shit hit a million, fam.
Yeah.
When you get a music video that hits a million on YouTube,
yeah,
something different happens.
Fact, bro.
Talk to me about that.
Shit, it was such a crazy time. In 2012, I decided that my sons at the time, I had two sons by then. I wasn't a good dad at that time, bro.
Yeah.
I was in the street, bro. I was pushing crack. I was, you know, I caught crack charges around that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, still robbing people, still getting robbed back, you know, and I started thinking, man, this is not no way to live, man. Like, I don't belong in a box. I don't belong in a cage, bro.
Yeah.
You know, my son, like, he called me out of the blue because he was living in Calgary. And he's like, I was in Winnipeg wilding. And I was coming off of a case, and my son was like, when are you coming home?
Wow.
Jesus. And me not having my pops, it hit me hard as fuck because I could never say that to my dad. Mm. I couldn't even call my dad dad. I remember like when I was a kid, I'd be like, hey, dad. Like, and I couldn't even say it loud enough for him to hear it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I heard that, first of all, I thought big ups to him for having, you know, being able to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed something in me. And I was like, I don't want to give up my life to these streets just because the streets want me to.
Mm-hmm.
Or the streets want me there or whatever the fuck. And I thought it, you know, or the fiends need me or, you know what I mean? My sons need me. Fuck the fiends. You know?
Yeah.
And no disrespect to anybody who's stuck in that loop, because I know you're going through some shit. But at that time, I was like, fuck all this. I need to get back.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and some wild shit happened to where, you know, the streets tried to bring me back one more time and just about took my life, you know? And I was like, hey, that was my, I gotta go back to my kid.
Right.
And as soon as I got back, there was this I Don't Know More movement popping off. It was like this resurgence of indigenous, like, activism, indigenous, pride, you know, all these people started like realizing that, yo, this Harper government is trying to fuck us over right now with this new bill. I think it was Bill C-45.
Yeah, I remember that. And you take mad shots at Harper in those in early tracks.
Yeah. So
I'm like, get him.
Right. Yo. So I went back and I took part in my first like protest rally where we literally marched from this res called Morley, Alberta on the Highway 1. And during all these dark times in Winnipeg, there was times of like light that kept shining through, like to tell me like, yo, there's something bigger here than what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the dark had to bring me to that light.
Right.
You know, it's like I ended up going through like the system in Peg, and I got out into this, like, I got released into this like rehab program that was like court ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this elder in the back because they had this like clearing in the back that was like land, right? And this elder, his name's Stone Bear. Shout out Stone Bear. It's my OG.
And also salute to all the people behind the wall, right? Rex, right. And especially the native guys behind the wall, right? Yeah, like, you know, not to single anybody out, but y'all really keep it 100 in there. Like as a man who's been down below,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? You guys, y'all have ceremonies and stuff like that. I respect it, fam.
Word.
Keep going.
Yeah. Shout out to everybody behind the wall, man. I still got people back there and,
the elder.
Yeah. The elder Stone Bear. I walked in cause I was able to like rock my shit again. Right. Cause I think I was in like a provincial.
Okay.
And then I went to this program. So I had my J's back, mm-hmm. you know, I was heavy. I'm still into J's. I got J's on right now, but, back then I used to rock a lot of gold and diamonds and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Big ass, you know, diamond earrings, big ass gold chain with the diamond pendant, all the rings and bracelets.
Swag.
So I'm walking in this rehab joint like that. And he sees me and he's like, what the fuck are you doing in here with that shit on, man? And laughed at me. And I was like, how you gonna laugh at me, bro? I thought I was the illest shit, right? On the street, you know, I was like, yo, you know, I had it all, I thought, right? I had all the little things, you know?
Yeah.
And that changed my life when he laughed at me, bro. Like, first I was offended, but then he's like, what you going to do with all that shit? You can't bring that shit into the sweat lodge, you know? Mm-hmm. Meet me in the back tomorrow, 5 a.m. And usually you had to go through this process to get to the back to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like a month or two process. But he saw something in me.
Right.
And said, get in there.
So all that freaking gold on your neck, say, this man needs saving.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, you can't get in there with that. So you got to take it off. So like we think of like the lodge as like going back into to the womb, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, like almost like we're going, like taking a little walk into the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next few months that I was there, I think I was there like 4 or 5 or 6 months or something like that. And he taught me about Anishinaabe culture. I didn't know how to cut wood at the time, bro. I was such a city boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it taught me how to chop wood, how to pick the right grandfathers and grandmothers, which are the stones for the sweat lodge,
mm-hmm.
how to start a fire, how to tend the fire, how to take care of the people in the lodge. You know, it's called a skabe, which means helper. He taught me how to be a skabe and take care of people. So all of a sudden I had this sense of like, whoa, I'm not breaking down anybody with this. I'm helping people.
Yeah.
Especially people who are coming from like lockup, people coming from a hard addiction. Some people were coming off of like heroin, crack, you name it, right? And I felt this sense of like, whoa, I'm helping somebody now.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt a lot better than taking, You know what I mean? So here we get back into this giving and taking, you know,
yeah.
You take, you give back. So he taught me all these things, including like songs, like Anishinaabe songs that stay with me to this day. And mm-hmm. I sing with my kids, like even when I'm on the road, I'll get on the phone and I'll sing them. And
right.
My baby, he just like goes from that to like, you know?
When you, like, okay, now that like you have like the music video is out, right? And like you went on after and you put out the another song, Red Winter, that also hit like, not Red Winter, Warpath.
Yeah.
That hit millions.
Right.
A couple mil, right?
Yeah.
Like this is all after those times.
Yeah. So let me just tie that in really quick before we move on. I can go on forever. Like the story runs in different ways forever. But the thing is like when I got back out west and I went on that march for the first time, I felt like that feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I brought a drum that I made with Stone Bear.
Okay.
With me on the rally. And I started singing some of those songs that I learned. You know, people were used to me like, yo, yada, 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 rapping, right? And then they heard me and like,
taking it back to like the roots.
Different, like, people, when I sing now, people are like, you know, like,
yeah.
What? This big, you know, it's big, you know, like.
And you probably didn't know that you had that in you.
No, neither. No, not at all, ever. I used to see, like, powwow dancers, like, because I didn't come up, our family was completely, like, almost sterilized, bro.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have like a powwow family. We didn't have like dancing outfits and drums and all this stuff, right? So I felt this sense of like community when I was on this march, this rally. And we took over one side, like one lane of the Trans-Canada Highway we took over. And in taking that over, you know, I felt this sense of power and this sense of community that I never felt before. And like, okay, this is where I belong. You know,
mm-hmm.
I belong with my people. And not only that, I also got to see what the world, like how the world reacts to natives who reclaim and natives who know their power.
Yeah.
They're scared, fear. So we're on the road walking, drumming, people passing by. You fucking Indians, get the fuck off the road. You fucking
crazy.
You fucking savages. And my kids right here, I wanted to fucking.
I'm getting another one of those things where it's like, no, this is the new days and times. It's not back in the days.
No.
Your kids are there with you.
Right? Yeah. So like if my, you know, if it was just like a year before, I would have figured out a way to get at them.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that me keeping my composure and protecting my son, of course,
yeah,
and staying on my mission, that is way more powerful than me going and striking that motherfucker in the head.
Yeah.
Because I could get locked up, boom, right where they wanted me and right where they think we should be,
mm-hmm.
I'm in there, back in there. And that's what I'm not trying to do anymore.
Yeah.
So I stayed the course, you know, and after that, parts of that day are in my Red Winter video. Like you'll see shots at the end of these like old ladies, old cookums,
mm-hmm.
and they're like wearing like stuff like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you see it, and they're walking, and that was the actual march. You know, we use footage from that in mm-hmm. the video, and also marches all over the world, rallies. I mean, all over North America, Turtle Island, New York City. They were having uprisings. Because there's natives everywhere, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everywhere. Every major city center is like either on some a tribe's ancestral land
mm-hmm.
or around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden there's uprising. Boom. I was like, what am I doing making music about selling crack and shit?
Mm.
You know? Because I made this song called Paper Music back in the day, and I was talking about hustling. And I actually did that song with the Gila, who actually became on to be one of the XO, one of the big guys in XO.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, he was with Capital Profits, I think, Belly and them.
Oh, salute to Belly, yo.
Yo, you know, so the history runs way back. And it was dope. He was feeling it. The Gila was with it. Everybody loved it, but I was just thinking, just something that just doesn't feel right. You know, it felt like I was like doing the wrong thing for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that Red Winter song. Boom. It went viral, like you said.
Right.
And I was like, yo, this is, I started living a little bit different. You know, I didn't get away from the alcohol then. I was literally still like 1 foot in the trap still, you know, but it took some time to like fully like separate myself from some of these worlds, right?
Yeah.
And some of it was really fucking difficult. You know, people were calling me this, calling me that, calling me a bitch, calling me all kinds of shit, right? But I like those people who were saying, you fucking Indian, da, da, da.
A tunnel vision, bro.
Yeah, you can feel that way, but I know who the fuck I am and where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made Warpath. I remember I was going hard in the gym at the time, and Tool Man was sending me these beat packs. And boom, 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 boom. Just, yo, first, you should know that I have risen through the fire in colorful buckskin. The object, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I've risen through the fire. I give myself chills, you know, like,
oh, that's,
like just from thinking about where I was at the time.
Yeah.
And once
you were at a crossroads in them times.
Boom. And I laid it down with my homeboy Nato. Shout out Nato in Edmonton. He works with Mercury's and all them. That's where I met Mercury's and all those cats.
Salute.
We recorded Warpath and we heard it back and we're like, who the fuck is that? My voice is like booming, you know, because I'm really laid back in conversation, right? But at that time, I just felt like I had to, like, there was something, there's anger, there's all types of shit going on that just came out, right? And it was like, whoa, we got to tap into more of
this. Go with that.
So we released it, filmed the video, went viral, bro. And then that led to all different types of shit. The world started opening up to me. You know,
yeah.
Vice from here started calling me out.
Mm-hmm.
So I started coming up to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Different publications all over were starting to pop up. And, you know, all over the world, fans started coming into the play. People from Germany, people from Italy, people from all these different places everywhere, you know. And I'm like, oh, shit. They're like, they want to know who's this big, you know, crazy native guy going in, right? And the homie Taboo from Black Eyed Peas heard it.
Okay.
And they were just, he was going through some crazy life shit at the time, which explained, I wasn't really like the big, like Black Eyed Peas fan. I'm going to be real, but I remember earlier on, like maybe 5 years before that, when I was wilding, I had these little breaks of light where I was like, hey, I'm going to bring my kids to this Black Eyed Peas show for some goodness. Cause it all was, you know, I've been on some bullshit.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Taboo like come on this like out on this like Tron bike like up in the air and shit, you know, like hanging off wires. And
yeah, this is the Black Eyed Peas, Fergie's Black
Eyed Peas. Yeah. So he's like flying through the arena, and I seen his long hair flowing. And I remember this story saying that he was part Native.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling my kids, "Yo, that's a Native guy up there." And inside, I was like, "I want to do some shit like that."
Yeah.
Fast forward 5 years, he's in my DM.
Mm.
Yo, Warpath is nutty, bro. He's like, I love it. He's like, I would love to work on some music with you. Down, man. Come on, man. Black Eyed Peas, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know? And we did this song called Stand Up, Standing Rock. I was actually down in Standing Rock just before that. And you can Google that and see there was a big, massive Native uprising down there. It was a major camp, almost like a town worth thousands of Natives who were ready to fucking, you know, head up with the bar.
Yeah.
And boom, that led to like me going out to LA. You know, it was wild when I met Will.i.am.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out the Black Eyed Peas family. Fergie wasn't a part of it at that time, but there was just like kind of like reconnecting the dots. And me and Taboo started this, well, I should say Taboo started this group called Mag 7, which was a bunch of indigenous MCs, like Superman, shout out Superman. PJ Vegas from LA, his dad is Redbone, like a major Native group that a lot of people don't realize that, what's the song called? Redbone, Come and Get Your Love. Come and get your love.
Okay, I was going to look it up, put it on the Spotify, see what they're
most popping with. Come and get your love, which is a major, major song for a long time, you know. And anyways, it had all these players. And then we had a Taino girl from Miami or from Florida, Puerto Rico, that was part of the mix. And we started, like, you know, doing our thing. And we actually, he took me to NYC for the first time.
Wow.
And yo, when I flew into NYC, it was life changing. It was like full circle, bro. I used to see the Skyline and Run DMC videos or whatever have you, right? Like Down with the King, that was a big song for me, you know? And I was like, I'm there. And I got paid to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a show in the NYC Skirball Center at NYU Skirball Center and in Manhattan. You know, and that trip was life changing, bro. Because by that time, I knew this cat named Ernie Panicoli.
Oh, wow. The photographer.
Photographer.
Yeah.
Who used to work for What's Up, I think it was. Or no, I can't remember. Source.
Mm-hmm.
Going way back.
Amazing photos.
Yeah.
Y'all need to look him up. Do your Googles.
Yeah.
Crazy book. I have his last book.
Yeah. I got. That's my guy, man. That's like my... Like my mushroom, I call him, like my grandpa. But, but he doesn't like that though. You know, he's my bro, my big bro. You know, but
salute to him, man.
Big salute to him. He's got photos with JFK, Biggie, Madonna, Tupac, Naughty by Nature, Quest, Tribe Called Quest, Nas.
He taps in. He taps
everybody. Yeah. He's even got some big Jesus pictures on him now. You know, but yo, it was blessed. Took me on a tour through Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Took me to Biggie's old house. Took me to his hood. Took me to this like Biggie like exhibit at Bishop on Bedford. I remember. Shout out Bishop on Bedford. It's like this art. It's like this art gallery in Brooklyn in Bed-Stuy. Okay.
Yep.
And they had this Biggie day, and he brought me down, and that was full circle for me, bro. Like as soon as he got on the mic, he was like, "Yo, before I say anything, I want to introduce you guys to my man, Dreezus, who's like the native Biggie." And I was like, "Oh, why you got to say that, bro?" I was like, "Yo, don't say that in Bed-Stuy of all places." And then everybody just kind of like looking at me like, "Yo, who's this guy?" Right. And I got to, you know, meet a lot of people in Brooklyn. And that just, well, I still have people there to this day, but that trip was like everything to me, fam, you know? 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We love hip hop.
Okay, so a few more questions I have here for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even like with, like now that, you know, you've made it as a more prominent artist in the scene, you're doing your thing, right? I want to like kind of switch gears a little bit. Because you've been able to see a lot of stuff and you're still connected. Like you still have your feet to the ground of what's going on. Like, let's say in the streets per se,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Without being in the streets.
Yeah.
Right. Is there polys between tribes, fam? Like besides what you've mentioned of like the separation that's happened from the residential schools and stuff like that. Is it like bleed into gang culture where there's like polys and they're like, but you're actually tribes?
Nah.
Because you know what poly is what I'm talking about, right? Like we have them over here, like politics.
Yeah, no. I mean, like one of the crazy things is like say you take Winnipeg, for example, where a lot of gangs were formed, like native gangs.
Yeah.
A lot of those people in those groups, they had no idea that they could be the same tribe or like, you know what I mean? Or they could even be the same family, but they have no connection anymore to the culture. So they're not aware of that.
Yeah.
So like, instead of seeing like, yo, that's my Anishinaabe brother right there. He's like, yo, that motherfucker's the ops.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's it. But there's not no real like, yo, this tribe is this gang or this tribe is that gang, because that's not how we work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like when it comes to like the real I shouldn't say the real, but like the tribal relations, it's at the core is basically like kind of ran by and like all the elders are the ones who like pave the way and kind of show, you know, lead it by example, right? So we might have historical beefs, like, of course, back in the day, right? That's, we were just us. So, you know, we might have beefed over a territory that had more buffalo or like this and that, right? But it didn't carry through to the streets to where like there's Cree gangs and Anishinaabe gangs.
Okay.
You got all these people mixed in now.
So the gangs, they just have a bunch of different guys from different tribes, technically, like from back in the...
Yeah.
Like they don't even watch face from what tribe you're from. Like you're either red or blue or...
Whatever.
You're not Latin kings.
But whatever, like, it may be.
Whatever the different gangs that people jump into now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, what about set tripping? Now, set tripping, not in the gang sense, but in the tribal sense. Is there ever like intertribal beef?
You know, it's just like petty shit all the time, but it's not like, it's never like an official tribe versus tribe or like.
Like something fucked up happened. You're like, yo, it went there, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like carved out by like whose tribe or like, it's just mostly like personal kind of things. Like sometimes families might clash.
Yeah.
In between, but it's never like this like formal, like, so to speak, kind of like beef, you know? It's not like, oh, you're that, then fuck you, you know? It's not like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's more like these certain city centers or sometimes even rezes that are big enough. Like, yeah. Well, that goes back to what you say. Sometimes there's rezes that are all Cree that have inside beefs. Yes.
Yeah.
Because of the different, like, they identify with something else that's not the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Something else took over there, like set tripping.
Yeah. You know I mean? Yeah. Cause like,
there is that.
Gangs have set tripping, but like, if you're all part of the same tribe, you all come from the same lineage, like, the only reason that there would be the beef is like just the different territories, money, and different other things, the other factors.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and okay, now, like, what about the Black community? Has there always been like an allegiance and an alliance with the Black community, or was there a separation at some point in time?
You know, I don't think I really could speak on that as a whole.
Mm.
Like it's all
just from your personal experience.
My personal experience.
Because you mentioned how like when you moved to Calgary, you started, you know, getting to hang out with different cultures and stuff like that. And, you know, you started veering a lot towards the Jamaicans and the different people, right?
Yeah.
But like, is that something that's a regular thing or that was just you?
I think it was like a personal thing for me, which happened for a lot of other people like me. But like, you're so segregated when you live on the res, bro. Like, you're so separated from the rest of society that a lot of it is influenced by pop culture and TV back in the day. Well, now it's internet, right? But back then it was TV and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, however you took to that as your own personal self is how you've seen these people or those people or whoever, right? And then you had your own, but like I said, we were broken down to the last molecule so that if we didn't love ourselves, how are we going to love anybody else?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of misunderstandings there, you know? And that's a lot about what I talk about is that like a lot of our cultures, well, in particular, like there's a lot of similarities between our cultures and how we were broken down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So for me, that's like a common ground that can be like shared. You know what I mean? And of course, like I always pay respect and respect due to the originators of hip hop culture, you know what I mean? And there's always that respect for me. You know, hip hop enabled me to be like see past any color.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To where hip hop music at its core is about community. You know, it is about uplifting. Mm-hmm. It's about brotherhood. It's about strengthening the community. You know what I mean? That's from what I gathered, that's where hip hop started. You know what I mean? As a way to like uplift. So I like to think that that's how I kind of came into it
mm-hmm.
myself. So for me, it was like, I didn't give a shit what color you were, you know, where you came from. As long as we're all playing the same hip hop, whatever, right? That was my world.
It's the common denominator a lot of times, bro.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And my crew was like multicultural, like a motherfucker, bro. You know,
yeah, so man.
Me personally, yeah, it was always love, man. And like, I got put on to like the food, man. I like to eat, bro. Mm-hmm. So like the Vietnamese pho, you know, like I said before, my favorite is stew chicken, bro. Mm-hmm. You know, like oxtail. Then you go and like, you know, your Greek foods, and these really opened my eyes up and my mind up to all these different cultures. And I was like, okay, these are all part of my circle, no matter what.
Yeah.
You can't break me down from that.
Yeah.
And that was like and now that I look at it, it's like a slap in the face to our oppressors. They don't want that shit, you know, cause there's more power in that. You strengthen the community by making it bigger,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that I can only speak for myself on that.
Yeah. Last couple of questions I have for you, right? What's one thing that, because a lot of times we have to learn new stuff, right? We're always learning every day. But what's one thing that you had to unlearn?
I had to unlearn not giving a fuck.
Mm.
I had to unlearn that idea of like that simple, I don't give a fuck, which in a certain sense though, because I still in a lot of ways do not give a fuck.
Yeah.
And that helps me in certain situations. But that I had to unlearn that wild and out shit, that self-destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn what is self-destruction. What are the major players of my self-destruction? What are the key factors of my self-destruction? And I see that, like I said, when we see people on the block, you know, asking for change, drinking, they're not aware of, I shouldn't say they're not aware. I don't know that. But to me, if they knew those things that I learned or unlearned, then they would be in a better place, right? But I can't speak for everybody. Personally, I had to unlearn that path to self-destruction.
Yeah.
And realize and learn who put that path there for me
mm-hmm.
and who pushed me onto that path and who tried to keep me on that path, literally to this day.
Yeah.
And once I unlearned a lot of that shit, I just was able to get out of those blockages, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to call them those little loops where you get, you know, if your little loop gets too small, you're at a standstill.
Yeah.
You know? So once I started like unlearning, I started learning what strengthens me.
Yeah.
What makes my community stronger? What is good for my community? What's not good for my community?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, I can go deep on that shit, bro. And like, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, man. Well, what can we what could we look forward to coming up from Dreezus?
Man, shit, I got some new music coming.
Mm-hmm.
Real, real, real soon.
You let me hear a banger, like off camera.
Crazy. Yeah. I've been working with the homie Dakota Bear. I've been working with a lot of cats, but me and Dakota Bear got some very special stuff coming up. Let's see. Just a whole lot of goodness. Like, I recently got onto the show called Yellowstone.
Okay.
So that kind of opened up this new doorway into like film and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been getting sent some scripts in that here and there, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, you know, it's a harder game to get into, but just to be sent those scripts made me feel like, oh shit, maybe there's something else out there.
Yeah.
And so definitely look out for me and more in that world. But in the very near future, I got some new bangers coming out real quick.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yo, bro. What are we at right now? We're at like about an hour and 33. Let's say with the little in the betweens, hour and 30, like this right here has been a very enlightening and insightful conversation, bro. Like one of the best conversations, if not the best conversation I've had on camera.
Respect, bro.
In a long freaking time, bro. Respect. Like, I feel that we've learned a lot about Dreezus as well as the different things that are going on in the indigenous community. And just, you know, we got to see into the eyes of a hip hop artist who a lot of times will get left on the outskirts, but you're really making your way through, fam. And I'm proud of you for doing it, bro.
Thank you, my G.
You know what I'm saying?
Respect.
Listen, fam. I appreciate you coming through, and for all the people who are tapping in here, make sure to share this, okay? Because this is jewels right here. This is not just a little flim flam rah rah ting fam. Make sure to share this to the people out there. Hit the like button, all that good stuff, and make sure to hit the subscribe button. Another one in the vault. You're off of this. Deuces.
We love hip hop.